And this is the problem of people that serve a lot of years in prison. They come home, they want to fit in, they say yes to everything, and not knowing that what we're doing is re-traumatizing ourselves. A lot of us are not ready to fit in to normal society. We need treatment. The DOC, the Department of Correction, need to at least take ownership. They need to take ownership for a lot of people coming home untreated. And trauma is real. And you're going to hear that in season two when my car was stolen, that I was just triggered to a space that nobody wanted to be in. And I realized that I need help. And I went to therapy because it was affecting my life. It was affecting my family's life, the people that love me. And then I start getting phone calls from people. It's like, I'm going through the same thing. But they're ashamed to speak about it because I don't want you to think I'm crazy because I'm going through a crisis. You know, I want to live up to that expectation. I'm a Pulitzer Prize winner. I'm this. But at the end of the day, I'm human, and I'm a person that served 31 years incarcerated without ever seeing a therapist.
And we're going to do part two and post online at democracynow.org. We're also going to do an interview in Spanish, where you can go to our Spanish website, link to it at democracynow.org. David Luis Suave Gonzalez, subject and co-executive producer of the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast Suave. His new book, From Prison to the Pulitzer Prizes, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning producer and journalist, Maria Hinojosa.
Is a legal ID. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and I am Dr. Demento, just barely legal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Talking about the environment and climate change really hits home with many people. Tune into KBOO on April 22nd at 6 p.m. for Four Walls for Us All. Join us in an exploration of safe, affordable housing, policy, and the passion to go beyond typical solutions to climate change. Learn how to feel more connected and empowered to protect Mother Earth and our fellow human beings in a way that's accessible to everyone. You won't want to miss it. That's Four Walls for Us All on April 22nd at 6 p.m. only on KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson changes course on enforcing homeless camping ban.
Oregon hunger advocates push for state legislation to help feed resident children.
And in national news, the Trump administration won't help return a legal resident deported to El Salvador by mistake.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 14th, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Anna Wilcox. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson is changing the city's course on homelessness, at least partly. In an interview with KGW, he says he doesn't support Portland police arresting and citing people who are homeless. That's a change of pace compared to former Mayor Ted Wheeler, who pushed a homeless camping ban through the city council twice after the first was rejected in court. Wilson said, quote, "We cannot arrest our way out of unsheltered homelessness. So I've really kind of pulled back on the officers from doing that, because all you're guaranteeing when you arrest somebody or cite them or take them to jail is that you're ensuring that person's going to be homeless for another day," end quote. Wilson confirmed he told Police Chief Bob Day to pull back on the practice. He says he plans to triple the city's outreach workers to better connect people to care. Wilson's focus on creating an expansive network of overnight congregate shelters for Portland's homeless residents. That was a key campaign promise and one that is expected to cost $28 million. That price comes at a tough time in the city budget. Portland must cut back on its spending next year to match the money they're bringing in. In total, there is a $93 million shortfall, and the Parks and Permitting Department are likely to take big cuts.
Advocates fighting hunger in the state are calling for supporters to rally behind the Food for All Oregonians bill, which would extend food benefits to Oregon's young children, regardless of their immigration status. Isabel Charlet has more.
Each legislative session, Oregon's Joint Ways and Means Committee holds a statewide roadshow to hear from residents about their priorities. At the Salem stop this Wednesday, April 16th, supporters of the Food for All Oregonians bill are urging people to speak up. A coalition of over 180 organizations says bipartisan momentum is growing behind the bill, which would extend food benefits to all of the state's kids, regardless of their immigration status. Allie King from Our Children Oregon, a member of the coalition, says policy experts, parents and other supporters of the bill have a clear message.
We've all seen firsthand how our worsening hunger crisis impacts our children and state. And it's unacceptable that one in six Oregon children don't have enough to eat.
King says Food for All Oregonians is one of the top priorities for her organization's Children's Agenda, a package of legislation dedicated to improving the well-being of Oregon's children, youth, and families. The bill is currently in the Ways and Means Committee. A previous version of Food for All Oregonians would have extended food benefits to older adults as well as children. Opponents take issue with providing food benefits to people who are undocumented. King says though the bill is linked to immigration status, it is not only about immigration.
We can't allow Oregon's innocent children to become the collateral damage of partisan politics. It's really important that regardless of your views on immigration, we recognize that no one deserves to go hungry.
Food for All Oregonians would establish a new program in the Department of Human Services to provide food benefits to children up to 6 years old who would otherwise qualify for SNAP but for their immigration status. The estimated cost for this biennium is about $7.5 million. Coalition members say they will continue to work until all Oregonians have access to the food benefits they need. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at Public News Service.
Portland City Council will hold its second reading of its anti-AI price-fixing ordinance on Wednesday. The ordinance has attracted a lot of interest, so testimony is already closed and capped at 2 minutes per person. If passed, the ordinance would ban landlords and property owners from using artificial intelligence algorithms to set rental prices in the city. Price fixing is already illegal, but this makes it clear that using an outside service to fix rents is also not allowed. By typical logic, landlords want to rent an open property as soon as possible, but with a price fixing algorithm, they could be convinced to keep the unit unfilled in hopes of finding a higher bidder. If every unit in a building or neighborhood is doing this, you get an artificially inflated rental market and an artificial housing scarcity. Portland and Oregon more broadly have been in an ongoing state of emergency for lack of housing units. Realtors, developers, and the Portland Metro Chamber have come out against the ordinance, saying it would make people not want to develop new housing in Portland. They also worry that it would hurt small landlords. That point is unlikely based on the text of the ordinance. It specifically targets AI algorithms used to fix rents. StreetRoots reporting revealed that at least one of these companies, RealPage, which is currently being sued for the practice, only allows the owners with more than 30 properties to use their service. Portland City Council meets on Wednesday at 6 p.m.
In late March, a hearings officer in Portland approved a plan from Portland General Electric to cut down over 400 trees in Forest Park to boost their electricity carrying capacity. Forest Park Neighborhood Association and the Forest Park Conservancy appealed the plan. Now on Thursday, Portland City Council will hear that appeal. City Council have a few options. They can weigh in on the appeal, the conditions of approval, and the findings. That means they could deny the appeal but change the conditions and the findings. They could also grant the appeal and overturn the hearings officer's decision. The city's permitting and development office recommended the plan be denied. Forest Park Conservancy Executive Director Scott Fogarty is one of the parties appealing the PGE plan.
We think it is a very wrong decision by the hearings officer to allow PGE to remove nearly 5 acres of forest, wetlands, and streams from an ecological area that is slated to grow into an old-growth forest in the future, as per the Forest Park Natural Management Plan. Regardless if you're planting trees today, it's still going to take another 100-plus years for them to reach the same ecological and environmental values as the trees you're replacing. So while that may look good on paper that the total number of trees replanted, the total mitigation that they're proposing looks good, in reality, it's really not. It's just a drop in the bucket in terms of the values that are happening today from carbon sequestration, from habitat preservation, and from just wetlands and stream use by animals and by recreationists.
That was Scott Fogarty from the Forest Park Conservancy. Portland City Council will hear the Forest Park PGE appeal on Thursday, April 17th at 2 p.m.
Donald Trump and El Salvador's president, Nayib Bukele, both made it clear during a meeting today in Washington, D.C., that the Maryland man who was wrongly deported to El Salvador won't be returned to the United States anytime soon. That's despite a Supreme Court ruling saying the U.S. must facilitate his return. White House officials are arguing it's up to El Salvador whether or not to send Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia back. But when Bukele was directly asked whether he had plans to return Abrego Garcia, he said no. He said, quote, "I hope you're not suggesting that I smuggle a terrorist into the United States. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? Of course, I'm not going to do it. The question is preposterous," end quote. Abrego Garcia was mistakenly deported because of an acknowledged administrative error. In fact, he was granted protective status by an immigration judge in 2019, which prohibited the federal government from sending him to El Salvador. He fled gang violence in El Salvador more than 10 years ago. Officials with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement have said he is a member of MS-13, which the Trump administration has designated as a foreign terrorist organization. A U.S. district judge ordered his return originally with an April 7th deadline. The administration appealed to the Federal Appeals Court, then to the Supreme Court, which put the deadline on hold while it considered the case. While the Supreme Court eventually seemed to support the previous ruling, it drew a distinction between facilitating his return and effectuating it. Senior White House officials have objected to the district court ruling in recent days and argued that a court cannot intervene in the foreign policy decision-making of the United States. Trump recently told reporters to, quote, "If the Supreme Court said, bring somebody back, I would do that. I respect the Supreme Court," end quote.
FEMA, other disaster preparedness agencies, could face tough times due to budget cuts. Crop seed preservation is in a precarious state under the Trump administration, and new executive order undercuts state powers on climate change. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The federal BRICS program administered through FEMA is exactly the kind of the forward-thinking, infrastructural-oriented funding we need to get our communities back on track after storms.
Leon County, Florida Democratic Party Chair Ryan Ray says cuts to a Federal Emergency Management Administration resiliency program don't bode well for states near the ocean this storm season. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is predicting another above-average level of hurricane activity for Gulf and East Coast states. But meanwhile, millions of dollars for disaster preparedness are being cut from areas facing greater risks for storms magnified by climate change. President Donald Trump's administration says it wants to cut $2 trillion in federal spending, but some are warning against laying off specialized federal workers when they're needed. The U.S. Geological Survey is losing $1.6 billion just as Alaska's Mount Spur seems close to erupting, threatening Anchorage, the state's biggest city. Scientists at 22 low-profile federal sites worked to maintain the nation's agricultural plants until the Department of Government Efficiency demanded they be fired. Professor Iago Hale at the University of New Hampshire says the program has protected Americans' food by collecting important plant species since 1898. He says losing these seed bunkers could leave the country vulnerable to a famine.
If you subsist totally on chicken nuggets and KFC, that's fine. Understand that comes back to plants grown in the field. The breading on your fried chicken, the French fries you're eating, these are all products of crops. And this is how it works.
Hale says unless dormant seeds are continually cared for and periodically replanted, those species could die out, along with their evolutionary history. A court order has temporarily reinstated some of the scientists, but it's not clear when their work will resume. States and conservation groups say they feel hamstrung by a new presidential executive order blocking local climate change policies. The order directs the Attorney General to identify and target state laws designed to curb emissions. For decades, conservatives have argued in favor of increasing local and state authority. J.L. Anderpoint with 350.org says the new order is executive overreach and an attempt to manipulate the market.
They're trying to cut our infrastructure for transitioning off of fossil fuels, revive a dying coal industry, cut funding for adapting to the climate disasters they cause, and now they're saying to states, don't you try to protect yourselves.
This comes as many states forge ahead on clean energy. Lawmakers and advocates in Illinois are working on the state's third major climate bill in less than a decade. Supporters of the Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act say it'll help the state's power grid keep up with increased demand and a rising need for workers. Ethan Minich with the Camp Grove Wind Farm says clean energy jobs have grown 8 times faster than the rest of the state's economy, and workforce education has had to keep up.
The technical training has certainly increased a lot. It went from on-the-job training with some very specialized schooling for it to now a lot of companies even have their own training programs to train people.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at public.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with some mild gusts and a low of 46 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be bright and sunny with a high of 71. Today in history, in 2023, the Human Genome Project completed with 99% of the human genome sequence to an accuracy of 99.99%. It was the world's largest collaborative biological project. The quote of the day is from U.S. President Thomas Jefferson, who said, quote, "Ridicule is the only weapon which can be used against unintelligible propositions."
California will hold events on May 5th to honor National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Day. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Events are being planned at the California State Capitol in Sacramento to raise awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous people cases. May 5th, on National Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Day, state lawmakers and tribal leaders will deliver remarks at the Capitol Park, and the Capitol Dome will be illuminated red for 2 nights to observe MMIP. Events will continue through the week, including a hearing involving tribal safety, and a candlelight vigil will be held. The Native American Legislative Caucus and its chair, Assemblymember James Ramos, are leading the week-long activities. Ramos is the first and only California Native American currently serving in the state legislature. He spoke at a California Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Summit this winter about tribal advocacy and representation in the legislature to address MMIP.
Being in the state legislature and with all your support, we've been able to start to bring pieces of legislation forward and gaining allies in the state legislature and within law enforcement, gaining allies to bring forward the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
During the week of activities, Ramos will present a resolution on the assembly floor to designate May as Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Awareness Month. Heather Schotten has been appointed the president of Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, becoming the first Native American to hold the position. The Board of Trustees appointed her to the leadership role on Friday. Schotten has more than 20 years of experience in academic leadership and has been part of the college's executive leadership team for the past 3 years. In a statement, she said she's honored to lead Fort Lewis College and is committed to building a future grounded in belonging, access, and academic excellence for students. Schotten is an enrolled citizen of the Wichita and affiliated tribes and a descendant of the Kiowa and Cheyenne tribes. She's been recognized for advancing cultural responsive practices and policies for Indigenous students. Her work at Fort Lewis College has included reconciliation with faculty and staff, acknowledging the institution's history as a federal Indian boarding school. She officially assumes the presidency on July 1st. AMC's acclaimed series, Dark Winds, has tackled various heavy issues, which now includes clergy sexual abuse in its latest episode. Brian Bull has more.
In the episode titled, What He Had Been Told, Navajo Police Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn has a series of visions and flashbacks while pursuing a mysterious figure through the wilderness. One involves a priest taking a young relative into an isolated space to do the unthinkable. Actor Zahn McLarnon plays Leaphorn.
There's a lot of things I could relate to in that scene. I went through some things as a kid. I'm not going to get into details, but they're very similar to, how Joe was affected when he was a kid. You know, I think as human beings, you know, we go through these painful experiences, these loss, this tragedy, joy. As an actor, all I do is I try to lean into that.
McLarnon says the episode's director, Erica Tremblay, put a lot of thought and sensitivity before shooting this specific scene.
Erica made a very, very safe environment, along with the other producers, Tina Elmo on the show, and Jim Chorey and John Worth, made a very, very safe environment for not just me, but for the kids in the scene. It was a closed set, so people weren't allowed on the set. It was just the directors and the actors and the cameramen.
In recent years, accounts of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse against Native children have come out in both government-run and church-run boarding schools. Last year, President Joe Biden formally apologized on behalf of the United States for atrocities committed against government boarding school students. AMC's Dark Winds is on Sunday nights. It's been renewed for a fourth season. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Oregon and Washington residents can use their IRS Direct File system this year. A free program that was created to simplify and speed up income tax filing by cutting out intermediaries. However, the Trump administration is discussing possibly eliminating the program. Isabel Charlet has the details.
Washington is one of 25 states where people can use the online IRS Direct File system to file their income tax returns with the Internal Revenue Service. But the future of the program is at risk. For years, taxpayers' advocates had pushed for a free, simple tax filing option for people who don't need a third-party tax preparer. But the Trump administration has said Direct File may be a waste of IRS resources. Casey Lance with the United Way of King County says it's time for people to voice their support for the program. She's used Direct File and says since the program auto-fills tax information from forms like W-2s, filing her income taxes this year was the easiest it has ever been.
I think it's exactly what people wish tax filing was like. And I think the only chance we have of stopping them from cutting it is if enough people say something.
Direct File guides users through simple questions in English or Spanish and offers live chat support in both languages. People can check their eligibility and get more information online at directfile.irs. Adam Rubin with the Economic Security Project says the process removes intermediary tax preparers and uses information the government already has to make it easier to file federal and state tax returns. Rubin explains Direct File is for people with straightforward tax situations, such as employees who get a W-2 from their employer.
Direct File is not yet available for freelancers or gig workers or people with complicated investments or who work across multiple states.
Lance says even if you are not eligible for Direct File, you can still use it to file an income tax extension by April 15th. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Last week, the Supreme Court told the Trump administration to retrieve an individual who had been mistakenly sent to an El Salvadoran prison. who had been mistakenly sent to an El Salvadoran prison. Today, the president indicated that he had no intention of doing that. KBOO's Ray Bodwell doesn't claim to be a constitutional scholar, but he thinks that this may qualify as a constitutional crisis. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
On Friday, the 4th of April, I did a commentary expressing great concern about the Trump administration's lack of respect for the right to free speech and due process of law that is spelled out in the U.S. Constitution. I referenced the ongoing incarceration of green card holder Mahmoud Khalil, the 10-day detention of Canadian citizen Jasmine Mooney, and the mass deportation of several hundred Venezuelans who were rounded up and sent to a notorious El Salvadoran prison. I concluded that commentary by saying, under American law, everyone, not just U.S. citizens, is entitled to face their accuser in front of a judge. But the Trump administration has decided that's an inconvenience that they don't need to bother with, and that should scare the hell out of all of us. Because without due process, the administration can make anyone disappear. That seemed like the type of issue that should have galvanized our elected representatives into action, but there was hardly a peep. Recently, we learned that Kilmar Abrego Garcia was among the deportees to El Salvador, despite the fact that he was in the U.S. under protected legal status. The administration admitted that it was an administrative error. Did the administration then try to correct their error and retrieve Mr. Garcia? On the contrary, they said that since he was already out of the country, there was nothing they could do. In a 9-0 decision on Friday, the Supreme Court of the United States told the administration to rectify the mistake and facilitate Abrego Garcia's release from custody in El Salvador, end quote. Today, in a meeting at the White House, the reporters asked El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele if he was willing to return Mr. Garcia. His response was, quote, "Of course I'm not going to do it." When reporter Caitlin Collins reminded the president that he had promised to abide by the Supreme Court's decision, Trump cut her off and said he didn't need to answer a question and then insulted her by saying, quote, "You have no credibility," end quote. The Supreme Court may have told Trump to effectuate the return of Mr. Garcia, but they did not demand it. And Trump's Department of Justice has been adamant the court lacks jurisdiction over what it claims is now a matter of international relations. Now what? If the administration and DOJ refuse to follow a Supreme Court order, where do we go from here? Is there a mechanism to enforce a Supreme Court order? And to add a layer of complexity, let's remember that this is the same Supreme Court that in 2024 voted 6-3 that presidents have broad immunity from civil or criminal prosecution for actions taken while in office. Can you say constitutional crisis? And in the meantime, the administration continues to round up people off the street like a modern-day Gestapo. And if you think my Gestapo reference is over the top, just remember that this was Trump's response when asked if he'd consider sending American citizens to an El Salvadoran prison.
We have bad ones, too, and I'm all for it.
For KBOO, this...
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 14th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Ray Bodwell, Josh Salem, Hannah Francis, and Doug McVeigh. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Frida Ross, Zamon Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Anna Wilcox. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm. KBOO.FM/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
According to newly published research, opioid testing information was unavailable in half of injury death investigations in the U.S. in 2021, and in only about 1 out of 10 unintentional overdose death investigations that were conducted that year. This at a time when the autopsy rate, that is, the percentage of deaths for which a medical examination is performed, is at all-time lows. According to a 2023 report by the Federal Centers for Disease Control, from 2003 through 2020, the autopsy rate in the U.S. has hovered between a high of 8.7% in 2006 and 2007 and a low of 7.4% in 2020. Percentages, of course, are really only meaningful if you have the underlying numbers. So, in 2020, according to the CDC, there were 3,383,729 deaths in the U.S., of which 249,337 were autopsied. That's an average of 683 autopsies per day. In 2007, when the autopsy rate hit 8.7%, according to the CDC, there were a total of 2,298,608 deaths in the U.S., of which 199,154 were autopsied. That's an average of about 546 per day. To learn more, I spoke recently with Dr. Alexander Lundberg. He's an assistant professor of emergency medicine at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine and the lead author of a research letter published February 19th in the journal JAMA entitled Percentage of Opioid Tests Available in U.S. Injury Death Investigations 2021. Dr. Lundberg, welcome.
Thank you, Doug.
So let's start from the top. What was the purpose of your study? What were you trying to learn?
Well, for the backdrop, we know that drug overdose deaths in the United States have increased dramatically over the last 20 years by a factor of 5 or 6. And we also know that in the United States, we have a patchwork system of death investigation, which we wanted to explore.